Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Ki Tisei. We have some new podcasts headed your way from Pardes, and I urge you to check them out. You can look for them on the iTunes podcast catalog by searching for Pardes. They're available on other podcast catalogs as well, or you can go to lmod.pardes.org and see the listings there. In particular, a new one is This Pardes Life, and I urge you that you check it out along with our other new podcasts. This week, Ki Tisei with Rabbi Alex Israel. Rabbi Alex Israel is a member of the Pardes faculty. And now, Rabbi Alex Israel.
Thank you, Larry. This week, we are going to engage in a study of what is maybe one of the famous, or maybe I should say infamous, episodes that transpired in the years of the wilderness. And that is the story of the golden calf. And the way we're going to study it is by reading the psukim, reading the verses, and then taking a look at two alternative interpretations of what exactly happened, how the people behaved, what the blame is for the story of the golden calf. And that's our approach. And then we're going to try and understand the virtues or shortcomings of each of the different approaches and see if we have a few lessons to learn from each of them. I think the best way to do this is to start by reading the psukim themselves, by reading the story and refreshing your memory. And when we've done that, we will be able to do a little bit of analysis. So let's begin by reading. And interestingly enough, if we look at the Masoretic paragraph, the story of the golden calf begins with the notion of Moses receiving the two tablets of stone, which of course he later smashes. So I'll start from there. When he finished speaking with him on Mount Sinai, he gave Moses the two tablets of the covenant, stone tablets inscribed with the fingers of God. Vayitein el Moshe kechalotol ledaber ito b'har Sinai, shnei luchot ha'idut, luchot even, k'tuvim be'etzba Elokim. Vayar ha'am, ki boshesh Moshe laredet min ahar. The people saw that Moses was late in coming down the mountain. Vayakel ha'am el Aharon, and the people gathered to Aaron and said to him, come, make us a God who shall go before us. For that man Moses who brought us from the land of Egypt, we don't know what's happened to him. Kum asei lanu Elohim asher yelchu lefaneinu, ki ze Moshe ha'ish asher he'elanu me'eretz Mitzrayim, lo yadanu mehayalo. And Aaron said to them, take off the gold rings that are on the ears of your wives, your sons, and your daughters, and bring them to me. And all the people took off the gold rings that were in their ears and brought them to Aaron. And this he took from them and cast into a mold and made it into a molten calf. And they exclaimed, this is your God, O Israel, who brought you out of the land of Egypt. Eile Elohecha Yisrael asher he'elucha me'eretz Mitzrayim. Vayar Aharon, vayiven mizbeach lefanav. Aaron saw this, and he built an altar before this. And Aaron announced, tomorrow shall be a festival of the Lord. Chag Lashem Machar. Notice, Chag Lashem, not Chag La'egel, Chag Lashem, Yud Kei Vav Kei, the name of God. Vayashkimu mimacharat, and they got up early in the morning. Vayalu olot vayigshu shlamim. The people offered up burnt offerings and brought sacrifices of well-being. They sat down to eat and drink, and they rose to dance. And then the Lord speaks to Moses and says, hurry down, leich reid ki shichetamcha, for your people who you brought out of the land of Egypt have acted basely. They have become corrupt. Ki shichetamcha ha'shehelaitam mi'eretz Mitzrayim saru maher min haderech. They have been quick to turn aside from the way that I commanded them. They have made themselves a molten calf and bowed low to it and sacrificed to it, saying, this is your God, O Israel, who brought you out of the land of Egypt. And the Lord further said to Moses, I see this is a stiff-necked people. Now let me be that my anger may blaze forth against them, and I will destroy them and make you a great nation. Hanichali v'icharapi bahem v'achaleim v'eseh otcha l'goy gadol. This is the terrible episode where only a mere 40 days after the giving of the law, after the Ten Commandments, we find ourselves in a situation where the Israelites are dancing round a golden calf, and God threatens to destroy the Jewish people. And only by virtue of Moses' intercession, his incredible case of assuaging God's anger, do we have a situation in which the Jewish people survive and we can move ahead. But what happened? How did this deteriorate so rapidly? Why did the people make a golden calf? And maybe let me specify some questions here. Why a calf? What were they trying to achieve? They know that they say very explicitly, this man Moses, who brought us out from the land of Egypt, we don't know what's happened to him. But then when they see the calf, they say, this is your God, O Israel, who brought you out of the land of Egypt. Or these are your gods, O Israel, who brought you out of the land of Egypt. But they know that Moses brought them out. So what exactly is going on? Second of all, Aaron, he is the second in command. Until now, he has acted as Moshe's sidekick, Moses' assistant. He has always been at the center of things, very devout, very loyal to God. Suddenly, he seems to be the one who instigates everything. Take off your gold rings, he says to the people. He's the one who builds an altar. Something seems awry here. Why is Aaron acting in this way? It doesn't seem clear. And maybe I will add a further thing. It's true that Moses is going to break the tablets in order to shock the people. But why do we need to hear about the tablets of stone being given to Moses? Literally in the line before this story of the golden calf. So these are our questions, and let's see two different approaches. And the first approach is going to be Rashi. And Rashi starts off at the beginning of the story with the following understanding. The story begins when the people saw that Moses was late coming down the mountain. Ki boshesh Moshe, lashon ichur, says Rashi, it's an expression of lateness. And this is the way that Rashi reads it. And Rashi's going to have quite a surprising read. When Moses went up the mountain, says Rashi, he said to the Israelites, at the end of 40 days, I'll come within 6 hours of the day. In other words, end of quote. In other words, he told them precisely when he was going to come back, on the 40th day, within the first half of the day. And now I continue reading Rashi. He says, they thought that the day he went up was included in the 40 days. But in fact, what he meant was 40 whole days. In other words, there's a misunderstanding about when Moses is coming down. And they've miscalculated. They think it's the 40th day. For Moses, this is indeed the 39th day. And he's, so to speak, departing from God and receiving the Ten Commandments, the tablets of stone, as this all happens. It seems like the Israelites, according to Rashi, have been incredibly disciplined for 39 days. And suddenly, at noon, on what they consider to be the 40th day, which is in fact the 39th, they realize that Moses is not coming down. And now we have to read it. When the people saw that Moses was late coming down, and the people gathered against Aaron and said, come, make us a god who will go before us. For that man, Moses, has brought us out of Egypt. We don't know what's happened to him. Suddenly, they begin to feel that Moses is not coming, and they ask for gods. Who is this group? Rashi interprets this and understands this as being sort of like a frenzy. The people suddenly, they desired many deities. It's like the genie comes out of the bottle. Here Rashi adds many picturesque images. One is the fact that there was an Erev Rav, a group of a rabble who came out of Egypt with them, who were instigating the whole thing. He even suggests possibly that Satan got involved. And I'll read one interesting line, which he says, Satan showed them something resembling Moses being carried in the air, high above in the sky, as if to say that Moses had died. Or But Satan came and brought confusion into the world and showed a semblance of darkness and confusion, indicating that Moses had surely died and that confusion had come across the world. At this point, everything seems to go crazy. Why does Aaron decide to go along with this rabble? Rashi explains that when Moses, and this is, you will find it at the end of chapter 24 in Shemot, when Moses went up the mountain for 40 days and 40 nights, he actually put the camp into the responsibility of two people. He puts in the responsibility of Aharon and Hor, actually the two individuals who had held up Moses' hands in the story of Amalek. And he tells them there, I'm going away for this period of time. V'hinei Aharon v'chorim achem mi'bal dvarim yigash elehem. Anybody who has any complaints, go to Aharon and Hor. When we read the story of the golden calf, we don't find Hor anywhere involved. And Rashi again, of course, quoting the Midrash, as he always does, says, well, where's Hor, and why did Aharon comply with this group of people who want to do idolatry? And Rashi quotes the Midrash Rabbah and says, Aaron saw that Hor tried to oppose this group and they assassinated him. They killed Hor, who tried to say, how dare you try and replace Moses? How dare you try and replace, make an image for God? And suddenly Aaron said, listen, if I oppose them as well, then there will be no leadership at all. And now Aaron turns to his job, which is essentially stalling, delaying the people till tomorrow. And therefore he says, go to your wives and children and bring their jewelry. His assumption is that the women aren't going to be so quick to give up their jewelry, and neither the children. This backfired when actually what the verse says is, Aaron said to the people, take off the gold rings of your son and your daughters, but the people took off their own gold rings. In other words, they brought all of the material very quickly. Aaron then decides to melt it down, obviously a process that would take a long time. But somehow this happens all very quickly. And then Aaron says, let's make an altar, assuming that he'll take a long time making the altar. Everybody helps him, and the altar's made very quickly. And then his final act of stalling is Chag LaShem Machar. We'll actually celebrate and worship this calf tomorrow, assuming that Israel will take their time. It won't happen at 6 in the morning. It will happen at 10 in the morning or 12. And Moses will surely be back by then. But in fact, the people there, Shkimu Baboker, they get up early. And this is the story. According to Rashi, and the way that Rashi interprets it, there's almost like a demonic force which possesses the Jewish people. A demonic force implanted by Satan or by the Erev Rav, the mixed multitude, or maybe the people themselves, their evil inclination drawing them towards idolatry, a strange impulse, a strange attraction towards this primal force of idolatry. The camp goes mad the minute they realize that Moses is not watching or Moses is not coming. All these primal forces emerge, and the camp quickly descends into a frenzy of desiring idolatry and almost animalistic impulse. And the people who oppose them are murdered. And all Aaron can try and do is try and delay. And even all of his attempts to do so don't help. Before Moses is even down the mountain, the people are dancing around the calf. If you read through Rashi says they weren't only doing idolatry, they were engaged in murder, they were engaged in fornication. All sorts of things were going on. A terrible, terrible scene. And the one thing that Rashi really might explain very well is why God wants to destroy his people. If the people deteriorate within a few hours, and certainly within a 24-hour period, from being an orderly nation, without images, without any representation of gods, and suddenly find themselves in a situation of orgiastic idolatry, we might understand why God says, this is a nation which I can't work with. This is a nation who I have nothing I can't work with these people. They need to be destroyed. And Moses, I will start again with you. A fascinating reading, a traditional reading, a midrashic reading. And this is Rashi's approach. I want to contrast it with a very different approach from also a contemporary of Rashi, who lived in Spain, Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, in his famous book, The Kuzari. And Rabbi Yehuda Halevi has a completely opposite view, differing in many, many, many aspects. And what I'm going to do is quote you several lines from him. I'm selecting different lines. The Book of the Kuzari is a fascinating work of philosophy. It was written in Arabic, so I'll read it in English, and we'll see how his approach differs. And I quote, "The Israelites have been promised that something visible would descend to them from God, which they could follow, just as they had followed the pillars of cloud and fire when they departed from Egypt. Now when the people heard the proclamation of the Ten Commandments, and Moses ascended the mountain in order to receive the inscribed tablets which he was bringing down to them, they waited for his return, clad in the clothing in which they had witnessed the drama on Mount Sinai, without removing their jewelry, remaining just as he left, expecting every moment to see him return. He, however, tarried for 40 days, although he had not provided himself with food, having only left them with the intention of returning the same day. An evil spirit empowered a portion of the people, and they began to divide into parties and factions. Many views and opinions were expressed, till at last some decided to do like the other nations and seek an object in which they could have faith, without ever prejudicing the supremacy of God who had brought them out of Egypt. On the contrary, this was to be something which they could point to when relating the wonders of Egypt, wonders of God, as the Philistines did with the ark when they said that God dwelt within it. We do the same with the sky and every other object concerning which we know is set in motion by the divine will exclusively, and not by any accidental desire of man or nature. Their sin consisted only in the manufacture of an image of a forbidden thing and in attributing divine power to a creation of their own, something chosen by themselves without the guidance of God." End of quote. Let me explain what the scenario of the Kuzari is saying. The Kuzari notes that back in chapter 24, when Moses went up the mountain, he didn't ever tell them. And this is his first point of difference between him and Rashi. He never told the people he was going for 40 days and 40 nights. He just said he was going up to get the tablets. Second, he said that he was going to get the Torah. So the Kuzari reads it this way. Moses goes up the mountain without food or water. He goes up to bring them something tangible which will represent the law and represent God. And this will explain why at the beginning of our account we hear about the tablets of stone. The people were eagerly anticipating something to come down. Now, according to Kuzari, the people were exceedingly patient. They saw Moses go up without food and water, assuming he would come back in a day or two. But he didn't. He didn't come back, not one day, not 2 days. So they waited. They waited a week, 2 weeks. One can only imagine that speculations were abound. After all, he went up the mountain, and Chapter 24 tells us that the top of the mountain looked like a consuming fire. Maybe many of the people thought that he had, ascended to heaven, or maybe others assumed that he'd been consumed by the fire. And as the Kuzari says, they divided into factions, each one suggesting what might have happened to Moshe. Maybe it's even remarkable, according to the Kuzari, that it took 40 days. I mean, think about that. We're talking about over 5 weeks, 6 weeks, for the people to actually come up with a practical solution. It seems like, rather than Rashi's approach of understanding things, where things happened swiftly, immediately, in a sort of like frenzy, here there was a long process of debate and discussion, and eventually it seems like the solution which emerged, and maybe Aaron was even part of the solution, was to create a golden calf. Frequently gods are depicted in the Near East as standing on an ox or what have you. a calf which would represent in some way God, maybe in the same way as they thought the tablets of stone would represent the law and God's commands. And that's maybe why they say, these are your gods of Egypt. This is your God, O Israel, who brought you out of Egypt. They're not denying God. They're saying that God somehow hovers over the golden calf. I'll read another passage from the Khazari, where he says the following. The whole affair is repulsive to us because in this age the majority of nations have abandoned the worship of images. It appeared less objectionable at the time because all nations were then idolaters. Had their sin consisted in constructing a house of worship of their own and making a place of prayer, offering, and veneration, the matter would not have been so grave, because nowadays we also build houses of worship, hold them in great respect, seek blessing through their means. We even say that God dwells in them, and that they're surrounded by angels. End of quote. In other words, he says, for them maybe it was nothing different than building a synagogue, a Beit Knesset, a means, a focus for their divine worship. I'll explain to you what I like about the Khuzari. What I like about the Khuzari is the Khuzari doesn't assume, it assumes that the Jewish people are loyal, are good, that the Jewish people were in a bind. They were in an impossible situation. Moses has disappeared without giving any information, and they really don't know what to do, how to continue. They haven't been given any instructions. It'll also explain why they go to Aaron. If you were deciding to practice idolatry, I'm not sure you'd go to Aaron for your answers. Aaron, of course, was loyal to God. But according to the Khuzari, they go to the high priest, so to speak. They go to Moses' brother because they assume he has solutions. It also will explain why Aaron was complicit. Aaron was looking in a difficult situation, Aaron not being a prophet, to find some means of representing God and keeping the religion on track, while at the same time maybe hoping that Moses would come back, or maybe they'd already decided that Moses wasn't coming back at all, but they still need to worship the God from which they'd heard the Ten Commandments, and this was the best that they could do. According to the Khuzari, though, there is one problem, and that is why God got so angry. If they were full of good intentions, why did God get so angry? Now, I have to say, the Khuzari has an interesting proof for his vision. He says, if you look later on, when Moses comes into the camp and smashes the tablets, they go on a mission to kill all of the perpetrators of the golden calf. And in fact, how many people do they kill? They kill 3,000 people. This you will find in chapter 32, verse... looking for the verse. Chapter 32, verse 27, verse 28. And there it says, 3,000 people fell that day. Chapter 32, verse 38, verse 28. If only 3,000 people were killed as perpetrators of the golden calf, then, you know, people of 600,000, very few people were involved. In fact, says the Khuzari, these 3,000 people were people who actually did worship idolatry. But most of the people were still loyal to God. If that's true, then why did God want to destroy the people? I'll throw the question back to Rashi. According to Rashi, if the people were so desperate to do idolatry and so rejected God and so wanted to go back to their pagan roots, so that justifies the people being destroyed, but then why did they only execute 3,000 people? In other words, the Khuzari explains that the people are basically good, that they were stuck in a difficult situation, that this was percolating for 40 days, and that they did their best in a difficult situation, and therefore 3,000 people who maybe really were the hardcore, who really did idolatry, were killed, but the rest of the people were exonerated. And maybe, let me add, Aaron himself became the high priest. However, according to Rashi, Rashi explains to us why this becomes a historic sin. Rashi explains to us why Moses had to pray for 40 days and 40 nights just to save the people. Rashi explains why they made a golden calf. I mean, for Aaron to make a calf, an image, this seems extreme. Rashi explains why God was so furious and wanted to actually destroy the people. And in fact, neither explanation goes all the way to explaining what went on. For Rashi, this is an orgy of idolatry. For the Kuzari, it's an understandable mistake. Okay, well, what lessons can we learn from these two approaches? So I want to suggest possibly two different lessons that we can learn. Let's start with Rashi. There are moments in which our passions get the worst of us. Whether it's, for some of us, it's anger, or whether it's when really we get a moment where we feel really down. There are times when our Yetzer Hara, I'll call it our evil inclination or something within us, sort of snaps and we end up doing things that we, you know, really didn't intend to do. And things deteriorate fast, and then we suddenly wake up from that situation and realize that we really shouldn't have done that. It might be when we get angry with a family member. It might be a sense of religious lapse, where I never thought that I would be in this situation of being so distant from my Judaism, and suddenly I had a moment where I just broke one of my standards, one of my religious practices that I always committed myself to. It happened very quickly, and now I found myself, oh my goodness, what happened there? And in that regard, I look at the golden calf as a very stern warning that there are times when your life can be going fine, and then something suddenly snaps. It's almost inexplicable. You don't quite know where it came from, and we have to be aware that this is within human nature, that within just a few moments, things can radically deteriorate and we can cross red lines that we never thought we would cross. And then the golden calf becomes a phenomenal warning that we have to count to 10. We have to remind ourselves constantly of our standards. We have to ensure that there are red lines in sharp red with flashing lights, which we realize we are never going to transgress. That's what I would learn from Rashi, that there are demons within us which can sometimes burst forth uninvited and unexpected and which surprise us with their power. How about for the Kuzari? The Kuzari teaches us that sometimes even the best intentions can lead us down the wrong path. Sometimes we have a problem. Sometimes it's even a response to spirituality. We want to solve a problem for the Jewish people, and we come and look for all sorts of solutions because we think they will actually be a solution to the problem at hand. And sometimes it will mean even breaking certain laws because we assume that for the better good, it's better to deviate from halacha now because it will have a long-lasting effect. I don't want to make a halachic statement here or anything, but we're all aware that sometimes those measures, times where we actually abandon our tradition, so to speak, in order to act for the betterment of the Jewish people or betterment in the long term, that sometimes that can backfire. This would be a classic example where a lot of thought was given to a very difficult situation. For 40 days, committees sat and the people pondered, how can we deal with the absence of Moses? Moses must be dead. But people didn't realize, number one, that the problem was an illusion. Moses was in fact alive. Number two, that the solution of actually breaking the cardinal sin of a molten image. Remember, I'm not dealing with somebody at a low level who is doing this. I'm talking about Aaron himself, who seems to come up with the solution of a golden calf. That even this can be a drastic mistake because it can lead at least 3,000 people in the camp to fall into deep error and can create a huge crisis between Israel and God. There are all sorts of moments in our lives when we encounter crisis, when unexpected difficulties come our way, when we make the best plans but things go wrong. And here we have two models of how we can deal with these situations or how situations can be dealt with badly. According to Rashi, there's some sort of primal pull to idolatry. We've got to be very careful of those sorts of things. According to the Kuzari, we better make sure that the solutions that we provide when we are in a difficult situation spiritually are solutions which accord with the law,
are solutions which actually really do solve the problem. We should always be blessed that when we do have challenges and difficulties, we find the right way to tackle them and to solve them. Wish you all a Shabbat Shalom. Thank you very much for listening.
Thank you, Rabbi Israel. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.